Hello and welcome to Pets Plus Us, a weekly program of information and stories about the companions in our lives, our pets. I'm Mary DeFranco, your host for Pets Plus Us. Coming up this half hour, does your pet need a prescription drug? Can your dog have an adverse reaction to her food? Do cats need other cats? We'll explore all of this and more today. Let's get started with All Animals Magazine of the Humane Society's September-October 2016 edition of The Magic Pill. Pharmaceuticals can work wonders, but it takes a complete program to solve serious behavior issues. This was written by Tanya Mulford. One of Nicholas Dodman's earliest patients was a small terrier who was so afraid of other dogs that he would attack them. At the park, his owner had to keep him on a leash and walk along the fence, far from other dogs, where other dogs played. Dodman, director of the Animal Behavior Clinic at Tufts University Veterinary School, had discovered that clonidine, a drug used to treat hypertension in people, could also help fearful dogs by reducing the flow of noradrenaline, the brain's version of adrenaline, to a dribble from a gush. Once the terrier started taking the medicine, his terror vanished. Soon he was happily playing with off-leash with the rest of the park pack. That's how one dog joined the growing ranks of pets whose emotional pain has been soothed by modern medicine. For many pets, drugs are temporary tools that will help them overcome fears or stressful situations. The fact that pets can benefit from the same drugs used to treat people doesn't surprise Dodman. During his 46 years as a practicing veterinarian and researcher, Dodman has never lost sight of the fact that his patients have complex emotional lives. In his recently published book, Pets on the Couch, Neurotic Dogs, Compulsive Cats, Anxious Birds, and the New Science of Animal Psychiatry, he describes the basis of his one-medicine approach as a recognition of the striking similarities between animals and human beings, both in their behavior and in their emotional and psychological problems. If this conjures disconcerting images of a pup popping Prozac or a cat zoning out on Valium, try looking at it from this angle. When a pet suffers from severe behavioral problems, it can be a real struggle for both the animal and the owner. The right drug, when used as part of a behavioral therapy program, can keep an animal in her home and help her shed some debilitating psychological baggage. If you're dealing with worrisome behaviors in your pets, read on. Does my pet need drugs? When it comes to run-of-the-mill nuisance behaviors, such as jumping on people or scratching furniture, drugs aren't the answer. These issues can typically be resolved with increased exercise and interaction, positive reinforcement training, and environmental modifications, such as adding scratching posts to the house. But it's a different story for a cat who obsessively grooms her tail until her fur falls out. Behavior therapy is a holistic approach used to treat the more complex psychological behavior issues that animals can suffer from, such as obsessive-compulsive disorder, separation anxiety, aggression, and post-traumatic stress disorder. Along with techniques like desensitization training, a behaviorist will look at everything affecting your pet's mental state, including your training methods, the amount of exercise he gets, his home environment, and even the type of food he eats. Should my pet be getting human drugs? Psychotropic drugs aren't human drugs any more than antibiotics are. Most serious behavior issues stem from fear or anxiety, says Dodman, and veterinarians are finding that drugs that have long helped people cope with these stresses can provide similar benefits for animals. Dodman's research has also identified genes shared by humans, horses, and dogs who suffer from obsessive-compulsive disorder, Tourette's syndrome, and autism spectrum disorders. The medicines prescribed for dogs and cats basically fall into two categories: treatments for long-term fear, anxiety and related emotional issues, and short-term treatments for stressful situations. While some animals may need to be on a drug for life, for many, it's a temporary tool that assists the desensitization training, says Dodman. The goal is for the dog to experience the formerly threatening experience over and over, and the dog loses the fear associated and no longer needs the drug. Why is my pet frightened or anxious? Like people, animals are affected by frightening experiences. Researchers have documented signs of PTSD among military combat and bomb detection dogs, pets who have lived through earthquakes and other natural disasters, and animals who have been abused. Individual animals, like people, have different levels of emotional resilience and different life experiences, which is why one dog may be traumatized by an event that another dog takes in stride. Animals suffering from PTSD can feel the constant strain of generalized anxiety, the fear that something dangerous might happen at any moment, and they might be hypersensitive to things like loud noises, unfamiliar settings, or strange people. When they act out in response to fear, the reactions from people or other pets around them can reinforce or even heighten the fear. What should I do if I'm concerned about my pet's behavior? Your first step should be to consult your vet, says veterinarian Melissa Bain, chief of service of the Clinical Animal Behavior Service at the University of California, Davis. There's a good chance that a cat who pees outside her litter box has a painful urinary tract infection, or that a dog who suddenly growls when you pick him up is suffering from a back injury. Once it's clear that your pet's worrying behavior doesn't have an underlying physical cause, ask your veterinarian to recommend a veterinary behaviorist, a licensed veterinarian who has completed a residency in animal behavior, or a certified pet behaviorist, typically someone with a doctoral or master's degree in animal behavior science. Some veterinary schools include psychological and behavior issues in their programs, so your vet may be able to work with you and your pet. For guidance on choosing a pet behavior expert, you can visit the humanesociety.org/petbehaviorexperts. Can a drug solve my pet's problem? Drugs are a great tool, but veterinary behaviors stress that a drug alone is rarely the answer for a pet with a serious behavioral issue. A behaviorist will typically meet with the owner and pet, diagnose the problem, and develop a complete program. Drugs may not even be part of the cure, but if they are prescribed, it's always as a part of a comprehensive plan for behavior modification and helping pets overcome their fears and anxieties. And now for the portion of the program I like to call Don't Eat That. Robin Downing, DVM, tells us about adverse reactions to foods in dogs. And this was posted on MonroeVets.com. What is the difference between food allergies and adverse reactions to food in dogs? Traditionally, the terms food allergy and food intolerance have been used to describe any and all adverse food reactions in dogs. These terms are really most accurately applied when the immune system is involved in creating the signs and symptoms that result. A far more accurate term to describe adverse food reactions in dogs is food intolerance. Food intolerance covers a large category of adverse food reactions that do not involve the immune system. Adverse food reactions in dogs often mimic food allergies because there are only so many ways that the body can demonstrate a problem with food. One characteristic of food intolerance is that it occurs on the initial exposure to that food or food additive. Reactions regulated by the immune system generally require several exposures before signs are seen. The incidence of food intolerance versus food allergy is not known. What are the different kinds of adverse food reactions that can happen to dogs? There are several general categories of food reactions that may occur in dogs. Food poisoning. Food poisoning is an adverse reaction caused by the direct action of a food on the dog. Food poisoning is a frequent cause of GI disease in dogs and may include the following. Ingestion of excessive amounts of specific nutrients like vitamin A or vitamin D. Scavenging for putrefied food. Ingestion of specific problematic foods like chocolate. Ingestion of plants that can cause GI irritation like rhubarb. Food additives. Adverse reactions to food additives are frequently reported in people and include compounds like sulfites, monosodium glutamate, and certain spices. Despite an impression that food additives can cause problems in dogs, data is lacking. One food additive that can cause problems is disulfide. Disulfides are found in onions and can cause damage to red blood cells. Drug-like reactions to food. Histamine, which can cause sometimes severe clinical reactions in humans, flushing, diarrhea, sweating, nausea, vomiting, and facial swelling, may not be an issue for dogs in general, except for the occasional individual reaction. Carbohydrates. There are several important disorders of carbohydrate intolerance in humans. Recognized by carbohydrate intolerance in dogs is less frequent. One fairly common carbohydrate reaction in dogs is lactose intolerance. The signs include diarrhea, bloating, and abdominal discomfort after ingesting cow's or goat's milk. Dietary indiscretion. Dogs are famous for eating things they shouldn't, including articles of clothing. Gluttony and garbage ingestion are frequent causes of adverse dietary reactions. The gastrointestinal signs may result from the bacterial contamination, fat or grease, or from bones, wood, plastic, or aluminum foil. It is important to distinguish between a dog's adverse reaction to something he has eaten versus involvement of the immune system and a potential food sensitivity. Food sensitivity or food allergy typically results in skin and GI signs that require a comprehensive approach to restore the body to a state of balance. Knowing the dog's feeding schedule, nutrient profile, and the timing and severity of any signs and symptoms will help your veterinarian distinguish between a one-time adverse food reaction and a food hypersensitivity. You can find this article and more in the Monroe Veterinary Associates Pet Health Library at monroevets.com. From Catster, do cats need other cats, or would they rather be alone? There's a misconception that cats are curmudgeons who don't make friends with other cats. So, do cats need other cats? It comes down to personality and age. Tigers live as solitary hunters in jungles. Lions live in prides in grasslands. But what about our domestic cats? Are they loners like tigers or social like lions? Yes, and yes, and no, depending on the cat and the situation, experts say. We talked to some of those pros to try to answer the age-old question, do cats need other cats? Domestic cats are solitary in one sense, hunting and eating. Dogs may have a reputation for being more social, but that is only because they hunt in packs. Not so with cats, who don't like eating too close to each other. Many parents in multi-cat households put their kitties' food bowls next to each other. But this is a mistake, says Marilyn Krieger, a certified cat behavior consultant in the San Francisco Bay Area. Cats have to eat, so they will, but they're not very happy. It's a little stressful, says Krieger, who is also known as the cat coach. Outside of mealtime, though, most cats have social needs. While some cats hate their own kind and must be the household's only pet, feral cats form colonies, and many pet cats befriend each other. They have several complex social and cooperative behaviors, such as caring for each other's young. Dr. Leticia M.S. Dantas, DVM, a faculty member at the Athens-based University of Georgia Veterinary Teaching Hospital's Behavior Medicine Service, and a diplomat of the American College of Veterinary Behaviorists, says about feral cats. The confusion comes from the fact that strangers are usually not welcomed. The group is usually formed by a family line, a queen and some of her litter that chose not to leave, not newcomers. And what about pet cats? Domestic cats are a social species, Dr. Dantas says. Yes, you can have cats that are buddies because they really like each other and not because they have to be, Krieger says. Still, cats are able to survive as solo creatures, Krieger says, even if that isn't their preference. And adult kitties have a territorial nature. An exception? Kittens need other kittens. That territorial nature doesn't typically kick in until adulthood. Kittens crave playmates, and they especially bond with their litter mates. But even if you adopt kittens from separate litters, they will likely become instant besties. For most kittens, the way they learn social skills is by interacting and playing with each other, Krieger says. Most kittens do quite well together. Still, though kittens tend to be more socially flexible, just with any species, some individuals are born not being comfortable around strangers, Dantas cautions. Matching your cat to a second cat? Do you have a cat-hating cat who must be by herself? A situation that might result from a kitty that got separated from her litter mates at an early age. Or a lonely cat who wants a buddy. It may be difficult to tell, as your cat may be clingy and needy with her human, but not necessarily do well with other around another cat, Krieger says. It helps to know the history of both cats, the resident and the potential newcomer, if you want to predict whether the two will get along. Having grown up with others is not a recipe for success, since cats are individuals, and some of them simply do not get along, Dantas says. Cats who are playful with other cats were socialized to other cats as kittens and throughout their lives and do not have clinical signs of fear or anxiety. They have more of a chance of success. When choosing a feline companion for your cat, look for one that is similar in age and therefore has a similar energy level. If you have an older cat, a kitten will torment and pester him with manic energy. The kitten's job is to be playful and explore their world and attack things, Krieger says. The older cat's job is to take a nap. If you have an older cat and want to adopt a kitten, get two kittens so that they can play with each other and let the older uncle relax in peace. Otherwise, look for an older best friend for your adult cat. Introducing cats. Cats do form very close bonds with each other, Krieger explains. Even adult cats can become close companions if they are introduced correctly. Introduce cats correctly by keeping them separate at first, Dantas says. This lets them get used to each other's sounds and smells and gives their brains time to hopefully decrease the neuroendocrine stress response. Each cat needs her own food dish and litter area, and positive experiences should come with introductions, like treats. Getting a new companion for a grieving cat. When a cat dies, the loss leaves a void in both your life and your remaining cat's life. The question is how soon cat parents and their resident cats should seek new companionship. Dantas and Krieger recommend giving your cat and yourself time to grieve and stabilize. This may take a month or several months. Cats form bonds, but they only crave the company of the cats they are bonded with, Dantas says. A bond cannot be transferred from one individual to another. Krieger also discourages bringing in another cat right away. Even though your bereaved cat is lonely, this is stressful for your pet, as the new cat is an alien. They know this cat is not their buddy, she says. They smell different, they look different, and everything about them is different. So I guess cats are individuals just like everybody else. Some like companionship, and some don't. From Animal Planet, what it takes to raise a guide dog, posted by Mary Beth McAndrews. Raising a guide dog puppy can save a life, which is why Southeastern Guide Dogs works tirelessly to train their puppies. They work with volunteer families, take a puppy into their home for a year, raising them and training them to be a future guide dog. But what does it take to raise one of these puppies? It's not as simple as crate training them and teaching them a few simple tricks. It's about socializing them and teaching them proper house manners. When the puppy arrives to their volunteer family, house and crate training has already begun, but needs to be continued by their family. Their families also are responsible for teaching puppies several commands, such as sit, stay, and down. As the puppies get older, their families teach them more complex commands, such as down under, when they go under the table at restaurants, and watch to avoid overhangs. All of these commands prepare them for their job as a guide dog. Volunteers must attend 2 meetings a month where they get support from area coordinators and managers. They receive whatever support they need to raise successful guide dogs. Puppy raisers are encouraged to take their dogs everywhere, from work and trips to restaurants and the grocery store. This kind of socialization prepares the dogs to guide someone with visual impairments wherever they go. Debbie Folkman is raising Suba, a guide dog sponsored by Subaru. She takes Suba everywhere. During the week with work, I actually take him on calls with me to see clients. So he's in and out of the car. He goes to restaurants. We go to Devon's, her daughter's basketball games. So he's a little mascot, said Folkman. And it's a lot of fun. They become your sidekick. You could be in a stressful situation and you look down at the puppy and it's all good. They actually help us de-stress. While it can be time-consuming, raising a guide dog puppy is a rewarding experience. Devin Volkman, who is also raising Supa, said raising guide dogs is the most rewarding thing she's ever done in her life. Supa is the second dog she's helped raise for Southeastern Guide Dogs and the second dog she's helped raise that's been sponsored by Subaru. Subaru's work with the Southeastern Guide Dogs helps support volunteer families and support an important cause. You can learn more about raising a guide dog puppy at Southeastern Guide Dogs at guidedogs.org. From Dogster, 6 celebrity chefs who love dogs, just like us. This was written by Ruggie Jolston, and he says, celebrity chefs, they're dog lovers just like us. Well, maybe they're not just like us. Some of us learned how to boil an egg 8 days ago. Not hyperbole, but when it comes to love for their pets, there's no difference between Ina Garten and this guy. Here, we pay homage to the famous chefs who love their pooches as much as any rosemary, garlic, pork chop. Tons of famous chefs love dogs as much as us regular folks. Here are 6 of the adorable canine companions and 1 very dog-like cat. Rachel Ray. Rachel Ray has a long history of taking in and rescuing misunderstood pit bulls, giving them a life that any dog would envy. Her current pity, Isabu, is frequently mentioned on the show. And there are several recipes like the peanut carob Isabuscati that are named in her honor. And no dog sits and gets rewarded as deliciously as Isabu does, seeing as how Rachel Ray owns her own premium pet food line, Nutrish. Michael Simon, the Chew co-host, made his mark charring meats at Lola in Cleveland and has quickly become a lovable fixture on daytime TV. When he's not laughing maniacally every 13 seconds alongside Mario Batali, he's giving lots of love to his doppelganger, Ozzy. Mario Batali. Speaking of the Chew, Mario Batali's dog, Willie, most certainly had a better summer than you did. Not only is his dog father behind some of the best restaurants and grocery stores in the country, where seasonal fare abounds, but he rode shotgun on the family's extended vacation alongside Molto Mario on the shores of Northport all season long. Ina Garten. Just for a moment, imagine being Ina Garten's dog. How incredible would that be? I'm a believer in reincarnation, and my karmic goal is to be reborn as the Barefoot Contessa's next lapdog, spending lazy days in East Hampton, eating whole wheat peanut butter biscuits and licking Jeffrey's smiling face. Conspiracy theorists may think that sweet Jeffrey himself is an overgrown puppy masquerading as a human, but until that's proven accurate, Winky the Welsh gets the glory of being that lucky dog. Drew Barrymore. By any standards, Drew Barrymore fits the mold of a celebrity chef. One, she's very rich and famous. And two, a quick Google search will reveal tons of recipes she's created that people geek out over. She also owns her own winery, Barrymore Wines. And what's food without a great wine to pair it with? Ms. Barrymore's has a special relationship with her dogs, Douglas and Lucy, as well as countless dogs she's fostered throughout her life. She credits her canine companionship to helping her cope with difficult times. And finally, Guy Fieri, the Triple D impresario, is essentially the human version of the Golden Retriever, albeit with blonder, spikier mane. But let's talk about his dogs, Roxy, a Mastiff, and Cowboy, a German Shepherd. No word on if their diets involve Guy Italian nachos, but one thing's for sure, these dogs are quite happy in Flavortown. And bonus, Bobby Flay. This is a dog piece, but it's my fiduciary duty as author to make sure you're aware of Bobby's orange Maine Coon Nacho Flay. He's bigger than most dogs I see around Lower Manhattan, and my money's on Nacho. So that will do it for this week. I'm your host, Mary DeFranco. Thanks for listening. Pets Plus Us is a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. I'm your host, Mary DeFranco. If you'd like more information about this program or to hear this program again, visit our website at wxxi.org/reachout. I'd also like to invite you to share your pet story with us by writing to us at reachout@wxxi.org.